Okay, I think I've illustrated the problem. Again, not for everybody. Okay? But again, I could tell you or, I don't know, entertain you. It's not even entertaining. I can make you sad and frustrated by the number of cases. Again, we're talking now in our office, 800 cases a month. Now, 800 cases a month are not all this extreme. Right? They're not all as extreme. I told the Bruns over Shabbat that I know of one case this week that our office has been handling. Then in the last week, the couple has been, right, she's already, right, Boris, by the way, let me just start off with Boris before I get to this other couple. Boris, by the time this whole thing worked out, his wife was pregnant. And by the time the whole thing and his fiance, excuse me, was pregnant, this really happened. There's a full-page article in Haaretz right here that's called, right, by the time we got the rabbinical courts to reverse their decision and to issue, to meet his mother again and to issue a statement of Jewishness and to open up a file in the rabbinical courts, in the marriage registrar to open up a marriage file and to use the resident amount of time. By the time I married him on a Thursday night. I performed the marriage on a Thursday night in a shawarma restaurant in Tzfat. And on Sunday morning, his wife gave birth to a nice baby boy. And the article is called, Eich mitchadnim mitgayrim umolidim yeled betoch shavua. Right? Right, for those who need the translation, how can you marry, convert, and give birth to a baby all in 1 week? Right? Okay. What? She did. It took, because we still had to do the bureaucratic process. Why didn't I do that? Ah, for two reasons. One is I'm official member of the rabbinate. I'm not allowed to marry outside of the rabbinate. But the second thing is, Boris and Rita said, and I hear this, not 800 times a month, but many, many times a month, we didn't come to Israel not to do things right. I have a woman here, I brought her file with me, of a woman whose name I'd rather not say, because, not that you'll ever come across her, but she's a bank manager up in the north of Israel. She's a very, very senior, right, figure in that bank. And she was, right, at her wedding, I'm happy to tell you it has a happy ending, but at her wedding, the joke was that she had had the longest engagement in Israeli history. She was engaged to her husband for 15 years. And she wasn't an aguna, at least in the classical sense. Let me tell you her story for 1 minute. Okay, this is a woman, again, immigrant from the former Soviet Union, but again, most of the people we deal with are not immigrants from the former Soviet Union. This is somewhat of a complicated case and involves a certain halachic nuance, which is interesting, if not problematic. Okay, here's a woman who got married in 1979. She was 15 years old. She was living in the Chechnya region. She was already old at 15, and her family married her off to a distant cousin, who, in her words, after 2 months of the 3 months of the marriage, my father had to come take me out of his hands. Okay, it was very unpleasant circumstance for her. She did something very, very off the beaten track for a woman living in an Islamic country. She went back to school, she got a master's, she was on her way to getting a PhD in economics, and in 1991 an Israeli came from from the northern Israel, and he came to the Azerbaijan region, and they met, and they fell in love, and they got married in a civil court there, and they came to Israel and Aliyah as a married couple. And they get to Israel, and they walk into, and she says to him, listen, it's been my dream to get married b'chupa v'kiddushin, because that's what she wants to do, because she grew up in a traditional household, and she wants the Jewish thing. Is she observant? I don't know whether she calls herself observant, or strictly observant, or partially observant, I don't know. They walk into the marriage registrar, and the marriage registrar says, well, you have a previous husband. You have a previous husband. You've been married before. Do you have a get from that previous husband? She says, no. There was never really, we just got married civilly. They say, well, you need a get. So they send a messenger to Azerbaijan, and they get the guy in Azerbaijan to send a get. And when the guy sends a get from Azerbaijan, the rabbinical court accepts the get, and they write a document that says that she's allowed to get married now to anybody except for her present husband. Why? Why? Because essentially she was having, right, from the halakhic perspective, she was having an adulterous relationship. Now, here's where the problem lies. Is that a problem halakhically? And the answer is no. That's, right? Except for one thing. That instead of reaching out to her and saying, maybe there's a halachic solution that we can help you with. I'm not saying that we shouldn't have anti-halachic solutions, as long as the legal constellation is one that is based on halacha. But the rabbinical courts ought to say, but we have a halachic solution for you. And instead of trying to help her, they let this woman just hanging. I have the documents right here. It says, if she ever wants to, right, if she ever wants to get married again, she has to come back to the rabbinical court. She didn't know what that meant. And that was it. Door closed. 1992, door closed. In 2004, she saw me on television with another couple who had gotten married in a Jewish Israeli couple who had gotten married in Thailand and then wanted to come to Israel and had a whole complicated mess, and we helped them out at Itim. She sees me on TV. She calls her offices right away. She tells us the whole story. The file floats around their office. We petition the rabbinical courts to, there's only one halachic solution out of this, it's a complicated one, but basically to claim that she was never really married in 1979. Right? This is something, by the way, that doesn't have, it's not, this is not some sort of innovation that Etim or Seth Farber came up with. It's a halachically acceptable practice to simply claim that she was never married. If she was never married, there was never need for a get. If there was never need for a get, she was never having an adulterous relationship. If she was never having an adulterous relationship, so this is her first marriage, no problem at all. We petition the rabbinical court. The rabbinical court says, instead of saying okay, they say prove it, which is fine, because that's exactly the niche that I'm in right now. So we sent a messenger to Azerbaijan to interview people who were at the marriage. This is in 2004. To interview people who was at the marriage in 1979. We go around, we get taped interviews of who was at the marriage in 1979. We bring it back to the rabbinical court on Hanukkah of 2004, just the day before Hanukkah, I think we had the first court appearance. And it's very, very humiliating. The whole thing was exceptionally humiliating. I have to say, I've never seen it again. Instead of trying, again, I understand, and I have deep sensitivity for the halakha in this area. But the question is just the relationship. And again, the window is, they kept on asking me, why do you want to do this? And she said, you don't understand, I just want to get married. I just want to live like a Jew, because that's what I came here for. She cried in the rabbinical court. She said, this is why I came here. Anyway, it took a few months. They refused. We went to go to another rabbinical court. They refused. Finally, we simply petitioned the chief rabbi and the chief rabbinical court, the supreme rabbinical court, the Beit Din HaGadol. And after a long diyun and after bringing the witness back from Azerbaijan, and again, the details are very complicated. For those who want to see the Pesach Din, I'm happy to show it to you. But in early December, she got married in my backyard. Right, with the approval of the chief rabbi. Right? The chief rabbi and the leading Dayanim in Israel today issued a somewhat novel Pesach Din, a halachic decision. They basically undid the marriage in 1979. These are the complicated cases. The question is one of attitude. It's an attitudinal question to a certain extent. Etim, the organization that I work for and I run, is interested in seeing fundamental changes, not necessarily in the law. Some people say you have to just bring down the whole system. I don't know. I really don't know. I'm not in a position, even though I see the dark underside every day, I don't know whether the whole system has to go. Just like I don't know, and I don't think it's possible, to get rid of the marketing machine that is creating the positive and negatives of the observance of Jewish tradition. I can't get rid of all the PR agents. I'm not going to get rid of the entire rabbinate. It's not going to happen. And if it was going to happen, it would have happened when she knew he was in power over the last 5 years. It's not going to happen in the next 5 years. But what is going to happen in the next 5 years are 150,000 Jewish couples getting married in Israel. And what is going to happen is 140,000 Jewish burials in Israel. And what is going to happen is 450,000 Brit Milahs in Israel over the next 5 years. And I want to make sure that every Jew who goes through one of those experiences has a positive and meaningful experience and doesn't let, right, someone from Pakistan get in the way. That's I think, the solution for now. Now, what I do is, I'm not the only one doing this. There's three or four organizations that are out there now doing this kind of thing. But the way we work is twofold. One is that we develop relationships, meaningful relationships with the rabbinate. So I can get, I always say that I brought it as a prop for tonight. Right? We have a staff of 9 people, and we have another 15 paid Russians who work in the field, and we have another 60 volunteers, but the biggest asset we have is my cell phone. Right? You can reach the chief rabbis here, you can reach the head of the rabbinical courts here, you can reach any marriage registrar in the country, you can reach any Chevra Kaddish here in the country. Right? If something goes wrong, really radically wrong, we have a very good, we've simply earned the trust of the system. Because a lot of this, as you understand, just like any business relationship, has to do with earning trust. Right? people know, I'm officially, again, I want to make it clear, the rabbinate which I presented in the first half hour as this mean, ugly ogre, I'm a member of that rabbinate. Right? And a proud one. Right? I believe in that rabbinate. I believe it has the power to transform Jewish life in Israel. And to make people feel that this is a meaningful experience that they own. And that they're part of. And they, right, unlike, let me make it just very clear, the Jewish life cycle is not unlike the Jewish year. It is something you're in. If someone is born, or you're getting married, or you're having a bar mitzvah, or you need to bury somebody, or you're getting divorced, you're already in the Jewish life cycle. That's why it's called a cycle, right? It's a circle of life. You're in it. And the rabbinate has the power to transform that experience into a positive experience. And, yeah, go ahead. When someone walks into the rabbinate, and I can tell you already three or four rabbinates, that because of careful relationship building and sensitivity training, right, I'm invited to speak now at conferences. I'll give you, right, here I am, this young American kid, right, I'm all of 39 years old. Last year I spoke, I'm sure you're going to laugh when you hear this, but I spoke at the Mohalim convention last year, right? Here I am, the majority of the Mohalim are ultra-Orthodox in Israel. And I did a session with them on what it's like from the perspective of the rank-and-file secular Israeli. What's their perspective on the ceremony? Not what it's like for the Mohel to come and do his job and go. But what's their vision? You want to know what I think ought to happen? I think when someone comes in, the first two words out of the marriage registrar's mouth should be Mazel Tov. Is that such a complicated thing to ask? And not, slowly. It's slowly happening. It's not happening. And I'd like them to explain to someone why they have to go through this process. And I'd like them to say, for example, in Jerusalem already, the rabbinate, which is it's an innovation. The Jerusalem rabbinate now will open a file for someone who hasn't proved their Jewishness. They'll say, we understand you have to do this, and this is a procedural matter, and this is what you have to do, and they outline. They don't just send them off. They explain to them what has to happen. But in the meantime, it's not like we're kicking you out. And it's not like we're saying you're nothing until you can prove that document. Just open the file. There's no question, but it's a couple like this, when someone holds their hand and someone says, don't worry, it's all going to work out, and we're going to find some way, is not a couple who's being thrown to the wind. Right? Now the rabbinate doesn't necessarily see itself. It doesn't necessarily see that as its role. I'll give you a great example. I took a group of 15 secular Israelis on this past Tuesday they're in a training program that we run. Secular, right? Really secular Israelis. I've never seen anything like this. I took them to the Beit Tahara, where the Chevra Kadisha operates and prepares the bodies for funerals. The head of the Chevra Kadisha there, who's a good friend of mine, who is, he's a Hasid. Right, they were surprised to find that he was once fighter pilot. But he says, to a group of secular Israelis, you can imagine what this is like. He says, you people who are going to be working with these people we're training to work with secular Israelis in the field, to basically hold hands as they come to the Chevra Kadisha, he said, you are an extension of what we do. And then listen to the following statement that he says. Because our client... This is in the most crass terms. He says, our client is the body. And we see your job as taking care of the family. Now, that is a statement that makes me incredibly happy and incredibly sad at the same time. It's incredibly happy that he's willing to work, which he recognizes as an ultra-Orthodox Jew, he recognizes that sometimes secular Israelis have more to say in terms of taking care of the family than they do. But on the other hand, that's not the model that we're used to here. Right, where the family knows that someone's going to take care of them and explain to them what they have to do and walk them through the moments of, you know, those difficult moments. Not because we're trained social workers, but just because that's the essence of our humanity is to do that. And there it's become to a large extent, it's become a professional and bureaucratic job where, again, the accountability is not to the end user. That's a problem. But there is light at the end of the tunnel. And again, I say, here, at this point, really, I could just promote what we do, but I'm not interested in doing that. I'm much more interested in you understanding there are groups, a number of groups, that are out there empowering Israelis and letting Israelis know that it's going to be okay. And there is room for optimism. Really, there is. So the way in which we work is that we make sure that people are well equipped before they walk into the rabbinate. And or before they walk into the Chevra Kadisha. They have all the information in front of them. That's one of the big problems here. We're slowly trying to turn the rabbinate and the religious establishment into a democracy, not just an autocracy. And we're slowly working with the rabbinate in order to do this by developing training programs and by developing seminars and by developing a wide, wide, wide net of volunteers who understand everything that is going to go on. Right? Just tomorrow morning, right, in 3 hours, I can tell you that our office has people going into rabbinates in Netanya, volunteers, who are taking couples by the hand to the rabbinate in Netanya and to the Beit Din in Be'er Sheva. In other words, I can just tell you from the updates I got over, you know, on Motzei Shabbat from the office about who's going where tomorrow morning. And we're simply holding people by the hand, and we go in, and the volunteers have great relationships with, or good relationships, or decent relationships, or even sometimes no relationships. But the moment someone walks into a rabbinical court with someone who's an objective party, so when someone gets angry, right? This is classic. I'll just give you a classic example. A woman, secular Israeli in Be'er Sheva, walks into the rabbinate to get married, and she's wearing a tank top. Right? A tank top, a gufia. Right? By law, let me just make it very clear. By law, she is entitled to wear a tank top. By law, if I understand the law correctly, she can walk into the rabbinate and register to get married wearing a bathing suit. But you can imagine, and perhaps legitimately so, what the reaction of the clerk on the other side is. Right? They kick her out. And they might not be able to do that by law. Right? But this is true. I'm not making this up. Now, what are the chances this woman's going to want to go in and get register for her marriage then? She has to. She has to at some point sign the document. What are the chances she's going to want to go in there when she feels humiliated? On the other hand, is she anti? No, she was just ignorant. She didn't know any better. So you'll say she should have had a responsibility to know better? Maybe you're right. But the bottom line is she didn't. She just wasn't sensitive. She wasn't. She was. But the point is, you're right. So what would you do, Eric? So what would you do? You'd say, let me hold your hand, metaphorically let me hold your hand, and let me walk you in, and let me make sure it's a positive experience the next time, right? That's what you'd do. Problem is there's no one doing that. There's no one like you who's willing to do that. Right? In other words, at this point, there's a complete gap between her and them. And what's her next stop? The travel agent. Right? Right to Cyprus. That's her next stop. So we've created kind of an interface that basically says, right? We even have an advertisement that we float around called Stop Before Cyprus. Right? This is your last stop before Cyprus. But that's the kind of thing. There is reason for optimism. And the system is also slowly changing. Right? They're slowly recognizing, or gradually recognizing, I want to say, not even slowly at this point, gradually recognizing that this has to change. And it is changing. It's changing both because the law is changing, and that is putting pressure on the system to change. Right now there's an opportunity where there wasn't 10 years ago for civil burial in Israel. That puts pressure to make burial in Israel a much more user-friendly thing. When it comes up in the Knesset for marriage, that pushes the rabbinate to make their system better. And ultimately, so we would want? That's a good question. I don't know. Again, I say I deal with the reality of today. The reality of today is there is civil burial in Israel, and less than 1% of the Jewish Israelis are opting for it. It's even less than 0.5% of Jewish Israelis are opting for civil burial. So given that it does exist, and given that people still aren't opting for it, but that's put pressure on the Chevra Kadishas to be much more user-friendly. 10 years ago, I don't think I could have gotten into a Chevra Kadisha to show a group of secular Israelis what happens from the inside. Nowadays we can, and they see it as a positive thing in some of the Chevra Kadishas. And again, with the Moalim, it's the same thing. The Moalim are much more interested in trying to service the families and not just come, do their job, and leave. They see themselves as shlichim of sorts, right? They see themselves as people who represent traditional Judaism, and they want to help. So there is tremendous opportunities now that didn't exist 10 years ago, even with all the anger and anguish and frustration and disenfranchisement. There's still a lot more opportunities. Just one moment, please. And again, if I can leave you with a sense of hope and a sense of optimism, I can tell you that the nature of the calls that we're getting and the types of people who are turning to us, right, are in one sense more radical. Okay, I want to talk about that other text for a moment. Yeah. In one sense, they're more radical. On the other hand, they're people who understand there are possible solutions. That's a very positive thing. I'll end with this text on the other side. It's in line of, to a certain extent, what Eric said, but it does show you some of the problems. What's the rabbinate up against? The rabbinate is up against a wholly new phenomenon. Jewish life in Israel, in addition to some of the factors that I've mentioned, now has something totally new that basically no one's ever had to deal with before. Take a look at this ketubah for a minute. This other side. This is a woman who turned to us a number of months ago at this point, or even the date is wrong on the top at this point. But take a look. This is a ketubah that a woman came in when she was again asked. This is the flip side of the previous question. She was asked to prove she was Jewish. She said, sure, no problem. I have a ketubah of my parents. So she brought in the ketubah of the parents. This is the ketubah of the parents. And I'll just start reading from the third line. It says, Berishon b'Shabbat, those of you who are familiar with ketubahs, please follow with me, right on the fifth line. That's on a Sunday. Whatever. And it goes on. So-and-so said to so-and-so, be my wife, Kedam Moshe of Israel. And they bring this ketubah into demonstrate Jewishness. Right? Now, you couldn't have a better proof of Jewishness, right? Hey, your parents got married with a ketubah. Anybody see any problems with this ketubah? Okay, no, Tashkent is fun. You can get married in Tashkent. Okay? I'm looking for the rabbis here to tell me what's wrong with this ketubah. But you don't really need to be a rabbi to figure out what's wrong with this. Okay, so the Edim sign at the bottom. You can see on the bottom. It says, Achatan HaMesader, and there are two Edim on the right-hand side at the bottom where the stamp is. This is a classic case of missing the forest because of the trees. Okay, I'm going to read the first two lines of the ketubah again. Now, imagine, this is, again, and this is, it's a classic problem because who knows how to deal with this, and I'll even explain to you how it happened. You listening? Rishon b'Shabbat is a Sunday. That's how they count in a ketubah. V'tisha v'eshrim yom l'chodesh Tevet, on the 29th of Tevet. Shnat chameshet alafim u'shvamot, shivim u'shmona lebriyat olam l'minyana, that we count here at Tashkent. Okay, let's try it again. Rabbi Kelman, come on. Rabbi Kelman, I should say. No one paid attention. Shnat chameshet alafim u'shvamot v'shivim v'shmona. Okay, thank you. That's in 12 years from now. Okay? Okay, very good. That's exactly what we figured out. How did they get to 78? Because this was a form. There were no rabbis in Tashkent in 1978. There was a rabbi who was employed by the government who used to come to Tashkent twice a year to marry people. This rabbi didn't know how to fill out a ketubah, but he knew there was a missing line, right, to fill in the date. The year, right? You knew there were two lines. You started to fill in two things. So what year did he fill in? 78. It was the year of 1978. So he filled in 78. Not 5,600, right? 5,778. He filled out 1978. Okay. So now what happens? This is the only document they have that you can prove they're Jewish. You put this into a rabbinical court. Is this a real document? No, this document is useless. On the other hand, does it prove they're Jewish or not? This I bring up to show you the complexity of the flip side of this. This is not an easy game, you understand? It's a very complicated game. It's not one that I have, right? I don't pretend to have the resources to determine this. What I do say is that if someone walks in like this, I want to hug them. I want to tell them we're going to do everything we can to help you. We understand you have a problem. We're going to do everything we can to help you. Yes, there are many, many, many cases. I'll just tell you one negative and one positive, and with this I'll end. Okay? I'll tell you of a woman who came to our offices, and she came to, again, I'm going to stick with this particular topic, just because this is, I think, it's also one of the topics that there's so little resources on. The question is, what do you do with it? She came to our offices. This is just tragic. It's just tragic. So she came to the rabbinical court in Haifa to register for marriage in Haifa. They said you have to go to the rabbinical court to prove you're Jewish. She went to the rabbinical court to prove they're Jewish. She met with the investigator. She brought her parents' birth certificates. The mother said she was Jewish. The investigator didn't like it. He sent it off to the police. This happens all the time. He thought it maybe is a forgery. It came back. It is a forgery. The girl, so the police say it's a forgery. When the police say it's a forgery, I trust the police. They have no best interest saying one way or the other. Police say it's a forgery. This girl says, how can it be a forgery? My mother, I grew up as Jewish. By the way, girl, 24 years old when this happens, she came in Aliyah when she was 2. She is not, right? She speaks Hebrew perfectly. She is rank and file Israeli culture, right? She's much, much more Israeli than I am, for sure. You don't have to try too hard to be more Israeli than I am. What happened? You want to hear the tragedy? It was a forgery. Her parents just never bothered to tell her. They thought they could beat the system. She wasn't Jewish. Right? She wasn't Jewish. It was a real forgery, and basically, the rabbinical court uncovered this fact, right, and basically had to tell her that your parents have lied to you your whole life. Now, that's a tragedy, and if the answer is no, but you want to know what happened? And this we fought until we won one part of it. Right? They screamed at her in rabbinical court, and they started telling you, you're a liar, and you're a cheater, and you've been trying. And they didn't realize that she had no... In other words, they couldn't conceive of such a thing where a parent had lied to their child, when in fact, that's exactly what had happened. So we got the rabbinical court to apologize to her for the way they treated her, but at the same time, right, the rabbinical court then, and we were fully behind it, right, called up the interior minister and said, these parents have been lying, they basically sold you a bill of goods and you fell for it, and you have a serious problem, right? That's a tragic story that we have no solution for. What's our only solution? The girl's pretty Israeli. Right, you can convert, right, except for one problem. Remember I told you this whole thing started because she came in to want to get married? Right, and she wants to marry a Kohen. And, right, that is just, it is just a tragedy. And someone like me, all we can do with her, and by the way, we're still in contact with her, right, a few months later, but all we can do is, or again, if one doesn't accept the halachic system, or one doesn't, even if one accepts it, but one thinks that shouldn't be going on in Israel, there's more steps to take. But because I do accept the halachic system, and because that is what's going on in the legal system, all I can do is cry with her. And that's what we do. We set up a volunteer, and we sat with her for a couple hours, and we're still in touch with her, but we really don't have any good solution for her. We still don't. On the other hand, I'll tell you the story, this I'll end, and again, this is all, documented, of a guy who doesn't mind if I use his name, a guy from Chicago named Mark Rashkov, who called me 2 days before his wedding, and he went into the rabbinate. He had served in the army, and he went into the rabbinate, and everything was fine and great and dandy, and they were going to get married 2 days, and then he came in 2 days before, because the way it works in Israel, if you got married, the way it works in Israel is the rabbinate issues you a ketubah, and he said, okay, I'm here to pick up my ketubah, everything's fine, and they said, oh, we forgot to ask you, if you have a letter from a rabbi that proves that you're Jewish, and he said, of course I do, but it turned out that Mark had grown up in a non-Orthodox synagogue, and he brought a letter from a non-Orthodox rabbi, which are not accepted in the majority of the rabbanayot in Israel, for whatever reason, I don't want to go into that. But Mark was told in no uncertain terms that the rabbi he had grown up with and studied with in Hebrew school, etc., by this particular, again, he wasn't told this by a rabbi, he was told this by a clerk. For us, your rabbi is as good as a goy. That's what he was told. Mark called me up, literally, 48 hours before his wedding. And he says, I'm in a real bind right now, because they won't give me the ketubah. In fact, they won't, because I'm not Jewish, right? Again, so I said, well, tell me your whole story. Who does your rabbi know? I started calling rabbis in Chicago Orthodox. I started calling the Chicago Rabbinical Council, etc. Okay, there was no connection, basically, to an Orthodox rabbi. So what do you do in this kind of situation? No, I don't, so you can't write a letter. It doesn't help. And you only have 48 hours to act. So I say, okay, Mark, give me your whole family history. Turns out Mark has a grandmother on his mother's side who was an immigrant from Poland who was a member of an Orthodox synagogue. Now, the chances of finding records from the 1920s in Chicago, they're not terrible, since I know a little American Jewish history, they're not terrible, but I have a much easier way of doing it. Mark, where's your grandmother buried? He says, I don't know. I said, is she buried in Chicago? He said, yeah. I said, any idea where? He said, no. So at 10 o'clock at night, which is an advantage working in Israel, right, I start on the phone and I start calling. First I did an internet search of all the Chicago cemeteries. What was I hoping? I was hoping that I could find out who performed the burial at Mark's grandmother's wedding, and maybe it was an Orthodox rabbi, and then at least I know what synagogue she belonged to, and then I'd be able to work from there. Here, by the way, I should say something quite ironic about the North American Jewish community. I uncovered a huge lacuna in the American Jewish community that I don't know what to do with, because I started calling, first I started calling funeral homes and saying, do you have records? They say, we don't have records of anything. We give that all to the cemetery. So I started calling cemeteries. On my fifth cemetery, I found her, right? His grandmother, his maternal grandmother. I said, do you have records of who, you know, performed the ceremony, the burial? They said, no, the funeral home has them. I said, the funeral told me you have them. So then I said, well, I'm going to ask an innocent question. How do you know she was Jewish? They said, we don't know. We just trust them. They said, we trust you. Okay, that's just, I don't know what to do with that. So anyway, so I said, do you happen to have a service that you can take a picture of the tombstone? I said, take a picture of the tombstone. You know what? 3 months ago, someone gave us a digital camera and a program that does exactly this. This is already great, right? Now I see, you know, I have a little hashgacha working on my side. I said, what will it cost? They said, oh, we do it for free. No problem. Send me a picture of the tombstone. I said, where is the tombstone? She said, oh, it's no problem. It's in the Sucker Lover plot. I said, what is the Sucker Lover plot? They said, oh, there was this Orthodox Jewish community that moved from there to here, and she was a member of that community. Oh, perfect. That's all I need. I call, right? That's all I thought I needed at that point. So I get the pictures. Right, at this point, the rabbinical court in Haifa is already closed, but they work with the Chicago Rabbinical Council. So I called my colleague at the Chicago Rabbinical Council. I said, I'm going to send you this file. I need to look it over the file. And if you can issue a statement that the guy's Jewish, then we'll get that over to Israel. And tomorrow morning, we'll have the guy married. Great. So now I have the pictures, and I actually got the picture. At 3 o'clock in the morning, I'm on the phone with Mark the night before his wedding, and I'm on the phone with the Chicago Rabbinical Council, and I'm on the phone with the funeral home. And now we have one problem. Right? It's now 4 o'clock in Chicago. We only have one problem. Go prove that Mark, since it's his maternal grandmother, is actually the grandson of this woman. Right? Mark, you have a lawyer? Yeah. Have him go down to Chicago City Hall and get me birth certificates of your mother and grandmother, which he did, you and your grandmother, which he did. By 6 o'clock that evening, we had birth certificates of them. That was the missing link, so to speak. Right? Overnight, right at 5 o'clock in the morning, it was already, I don't know, 8 o'clock at night in Chicago, they issued me a Yadut certificate from Chicago. We took that to the rabbinical court in the morning in Haifa, and he was married that afternoon. Okay? So that's the kind of work, right? You need to be a little detective, and you have to have a sense of adventure. I'm always happy to do that. But you can really get these things done. So there is a problem here. This is just one slice of the problem. But again, I say there is real reason for optimism. I think there is a real sea change going on in the institutionalized religious life in Israel. And I think that only time will tell. But I think time will tell in a very positive way. And in that context, I think really there's what to be hopeful for. I think I've gone a little over time, so I'm happy to take questions, but maybe we're better off doing it in the context of food. So thank you very much. Okay,